Dolly Parton is probably the most honored female country performer of all time. We would be here all day if I were to try to list all of her many awards. And as we've seen with movies like 9 to 5 and Steel Magnolias, she's also a talented actress. She's just added a new film to her credits, Joyful Noise, which opens today just in time for Martin Luther King Day, and it's in theaters around town. In it, she stars as Gigi Sparrow, a spirited member of a rural Georgia gospel choir and the rival of Vi Rose, who's played by Queen Latifah. I'm very pleased that it brings the one and only Dolly Parton to our studios today. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much. That was a good intro, and we had so much fun doing this Joyful Noise movie.
Well, you haven't made a film in 20 years, and I'm sure you've been offered other projects during that time. So what was it about the script for this film that made you change your mind?
Well, this one just stood for everything I believe in. It was about community, family, had a lot of hope, faith, and it had a lot of fun in it, too. So it was really just about the small town falling on hard times, a choir that's used to competing. And I thought my personality worked real well with the Gigi Sparrow. I got a chance to wear the big hair and the high heels and kind of be over the top in
and
a small town.
And a fitted choir robe.
Yeah,
the
of course. You know me, I have to have my fitted choir robe. I'm so short, I always said I had to do it because I'm so little and my front is kind of sticks out a little. And if I wear just a robe, it just drops straight down. So I said, you got to give me a little bit of contour here. I can't just run around looking like a tent.
You're wearing something fitted right now.
I
understand you never wear the same outfit twice
well,
to an interview?
Well, that's not true. That's not true.
That's just a rumor?
That's a rumor because I do often have to, and, you know, because I do a lot of work at Dollywood, and plus a lot of the stuff I do wear a few times, and then I auction it off or put it in somebody else's museum or sell it for charity. But no, I'm one of those kind of people that if I need to wear it again, I will.
Well, you did a CNN interview in the same outfit. I was feeling like I was already getting second dibs.
Did you?
had Queen Latifah, you call her Dana, had she already signed on when you were approached about this?
No. Actually, Todd Graff, who wrote this wonderful, nice Jewish fella that wrote this Christian movie, he wrote and directed this, and he wrote it with me in mind because he was a fan of mine, and he said he'd miss seeing me on the screen. So he literally wrote the part for me, and he brought it to me, and then they were saying who they would like to get. And they had mentioned her name. I said, oh, my goodness, there's no way I wouldn't do it if I could do it with her, because I've always thought we'd work well together. Our personalities on screen seems to be very similar, just outgoing and fun. And our voices blended well. We met. We loved each other more than we thought we would, really. And we just had a great time.
But you play two characters who can't help but rub each other the wrong way.
Oh, we fight all the way through the movie. We had good times behind the scenes.
Did that require acting?
Well, not really. Well, actually, when we first did the big fight scene, which is one of the most important scenes in the movie, we purposely tried to kind of keep our distance, and we'd make snide remarks just for fun, sarcastic stuff, because we're both quick and witty and silly. So we would try to, you know, stir up each other so when it got time for the fight, it would really have some fire in it. But we spent a day and a half in a fight. She gets me in a headlock, and I throw all sorts of things at her. But it has a lot of fun lines during the fight and a lot of visuals that make you laugh.
Any ad-libbed?
Many ad-libs. In fact, that character was so close to me, Todd Graff said, just go for it because I want you to be you, because he wrote a lot of things that I say, actually, in the movie. But then he allowed both of us to ad-lib, and if it was good enough, he kept it. If not, he threw it out.
Well, in that scene in the diner where you have the cat fight, she makes some nasty remarks about your nips and tucks. At one point, she said, you read the Bible to reminisce. you come back with, God didn't make plastic surgeons so that they would starve. Now, I was surprised that you would even address that.
Oh, I didn't care because I've been at it so long. I've been in this business.
It's like Joan Rivers. You're proud of?
Well, no, I'm not proud of it. I'd prefer nobody to ever know I did anything. But when people, you know, did start knowing, you know, I thought, well, I don't want to lie about it. I'd rather just tell the truth. And I've just tried to make it as fun as I can. But personally, I would prefer nobody know anything. Nobody would ever ask me anything. But since they do, since they have, I'm a good sport. And there's too many fun lines not to make the most of it. And I'm the one that encouraged Todd to actually use that in the movie because I know people get a kick out of that kind of stuff.
There's also a food fight there where you're throwing spaghetti and rolls at Dana. did that take a lot of takes? Or
well,
are you pretty
actually,
good at throwing?
I'm good at throwing. Actually, I hit pretty much on target. I zinged her a time or two that where it fell off of the where I'm throwing at a big silver dish she has, her tray. She's using it as a guard, but sometimes I hit it. But it took us the whole scene, which there's more, you know, it's a big long scene where we fight toward the end and keep it going. But it took us a day and a half, the better part of almost 2 days to do it, because when you do things with food, you have to clean up after and you have to restock that, and then you have to clean the floor up so you don't kill yourself sliding around in it, and you have to fix your hair back and you have to do your makeup back because I threw water in her face and I got stuff all over me. So anyway, it took some time, but it was worth it and it was fun.
My guest is Dolly Parton, who's won 8 Grammy Awards, including a 2011 Lifetime Achievement Award. And the reason I mention the Grammys is because I don't know if they've changed the categories, because they have been recently, but for a long time they had traditional gospel and contemporary gospel as separate awards. And to a large degree, this film is about the transition or the battle between the two, or the cultural conflict between the two approaches.
Well, there's a lot of different styles in this movie. They took a lot of songs, pop, rock, hip-hop songs, and then they actually changed the lyrics and made them into songs of praise. And, of course, I wrote I wrote 3 of the songs. The first one you played coming on, that Not Enough Love, it's more of a traditional gospel sounding. But there was so much stuff in this movie, it's hard to really say what this is.
Well, it's interesting that in the old days in gospel music, gospel songs would be adopted into pop songs. More recently, we've seen it moving in the other direction. In this film, we have secular songs by Sly Stone, Usher, Stevie Wonder, Chris Brown, and others, all being transformed into songs of praise.
It is, but it made such wonderful music. I mean, it will get you going. And I got a chance to sing the Chris Brown song Forever, and it was just so high-spirited when I was singing it. I just loved it. I just loved how it made me feel, changing the words into a song of praise. But it's really, I think the soundtrack is just going to be absolutely wonderful. I think people are going to take to it because it really, you cannot be not moved. And all those wonderful choirs that we actually had that were really competing, I thought were just great.
Including some pretty big stars in the gospel field, like Kirk Franklin.
Oh, well, absolutely. People loved him.
And then there's a kid.
He not great?
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
He was singing Billy Preston's song.
Mm-hmm.
It's in a contest, and the audience thinks, well, after that, nobody can win.
Well, that little group, that choir they put together.
Was that a real
children,
choir?
No, actually, I think they kind of put that together like they did our choir, which is the Packershaw choir, was the name of ours. But they actually took that little boy. He sounds so much like Michael Jackson when Michael was little. But they chose a lot of other young girls and boys and mixed them in with a fuller choir. But, man, it was just spectacular what they did. And it was, I mean, when you first see them, you think there is no way on earth that anybody could beat that. And sure enough, we had to come up with something that was great. And we did, and we won, but it was like a
you gave away
thing.
The ending.
Oh,
nobody
it's okay.
would have guessed People, that your choir would have won.
Yeah, right. But anyway, it was like when you see that kid in the movie, you think there's no way that they could win. But like I say, whether we were good enough or not, but actually we were. I thought, how are we gonna win from after that children's
His name is Ivan Kelly Jr.
Yes.
And he really was doing the singing?
He did. And he actually...
He reminded me of Frankie Lyman. If they ever do another movie about Frankie Lyman, he looks just like him.
Yeah, he could do that. I know it was so funny because I grew up in the Pentecostal church. My grandpa was a preacher. That's that holy roller speaking in tongues church. And that little boy, I guess Todd Graff, like I say, who's Jewish and don't know anything about Christian, he even researched it to the point. He even had the kid like doing like a... in that one little section where he actually speaks in unknown tongue, in tongues. I said, well, what are they going to do, ask me to interpret it? Because I grew up in the church. But anyway, it was just amazing how they had that little kid doing that. It was like Just an amazing thing.
Did you start singing in the church?
I did. As I mentioned, my grandpa was a preacher, and I started singing in church before I even remember it all of my life. We would be allowed to get up and play our instruments and sing songs. All my mother's people are musical, so I used to sing with my brothers and sisters and my mom and uncles and aunts. And we would sing in church, but we would sing at different places like weddings and funerals and any kind of functions around town, barn dances and square dances and the state or the county fair, that sort of thing. So we were very musical.
Did you sing in the church choir?
We didn't have a choir. We were just a congregation. Everybody sang and shouted and got in the spirit, though. We were like the choir, though. We were always hooping and a-hollering and a-singing.
Well, this is set in Peckershaw, Georgia, and the choir is integrated. I thought that might be an odd situation, especially in a church where the minister is black. In Georgia, I could see it some other places. But every choir in this film is integrated.
It is. Well, the minister was black. That was played by Courtney B. Vance. But my husband, who's Chris Christopherson, he was the musical director of the choir in the movie. He dies early on.
And he dies before the titles come on.
I know, but he comes back in some fantasy scenes. But he dies right in the first song, and that's where the rub lies. I think I should take over because I'm the one that helps with the songs, and then Vi Rose gets it because she's been in the choir so long and she's so good. So that's kind of what starts the rub. But anyway, it's got all the elements of a very entertaining show.
I was surprised to see Chris Christopherson killed off so early.
Well, he was on another movie. He was doing something else. We had to kill him.
My guest is Dolly Parton, who stars as Gigi Sparrow in Joyful Noise, which opens today in theaters around town. As I said earlier, just in time for Martin Luther King Day. And they held back release until now because of that?
Yes, because there were so many blacks in the movie, and they were also proud of it, and so was I. And we actually did it in Atlanta. We spent the whole 3 months doing the show there. So we had hoped that we could actually do the premiere there, but we had so much press and TV and stuff to do in L.A., so they decided to go ahead and just do it in L.A. But it's going to be a big weekend, I think, for Martin Luther King Day, and we're all very proud of it.
Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Jolene, 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 please don't take him just because you can. Your beauty is beyond compare, with flaming locks of auburn hair, with ivory skin and eyes of emerald green. From a shack by a mountain stream to a room in New Orleans, so far from my Blue Ridge mountain home, the men I meet ain't warm and friendly like the one in old Virginia. Oh, they ain't real like my Blue Ridge Mountain boy. I was just a little past 18 when I came to New Orleans. I'd never been beyond my
Dolly Parton singing My Blue Ridge Mountain Boy.
You're taking me back so far. My goodness, that's
so
amazing,
long ago. But you know what's amazing to me, listening to this and then listening to you from the soundtrack? Voice hasn't changed all that much. People's voices usually go down a couple of octaves as they get older. Have you done anything to keep the voice in that range?
I just sing all the time. I write all the time. I work all the time. So I guess You know, I guess there's a lot to be said about just keeping a thing exercised.
Well, I wanted to talk to you more about the film, but can we take a little diversion here? We're getting a lot of excited comments from listeners, including Carol from Brooklyn, who writes, Dolly, thank you so much for your imagination library. She says, for those who are not familiar with the program, Dolly has partnered with local jurisdictions to send wonderful books once a month to any kid who enrolls in the program. She includes reading tips for parents and some notes about the selection of each book. It's amazing, generous, and one of the greatest gifts I can imagine to many kids, my own included. We're big Dolly Parton fans at our house.
Well, how wonderful. This is a program I'm very proud of. We have given away 40 million books from the time.
40 million?
40 million books from the time we started a few years back. And we started, it was a program I started in my home area because a lot of my own relatives and friends and neighbors didn't get a chance to go to school because big families living back in rural areas. And so I started in honor of my dad, and then it was Tennessee, went all over Tennessee, then to Canada. Now we're all over different parts of the world. So we're very proud of it. Where you give, we actually give a children books from the time, once a month, until they start school. So they get the books in their own name and comes in the mailbox, and it makes them want to learn to read, and it helps parents too.
Well, you were one of 12 children. You're
yes.
The fourth of 12. Did you get to learn how to read?
Because yes.
You were off working at a very early age.
I was, but I don't remember ever learning to read because it seems like I always knew how to do that. My mother could read very well, and she read the Bible all the time. And so I learned to read very early on. But my dad never had a chance to go to school. He couldn't read and write, but he was a brilliant man in spite of that. You know, he made do with all that house full of kids, and he always kept us fed and clothed and kept a roof over our head. But I did it mostly in honor of him, and so it was just a wonderful program, and as it grows, it's just one of the things I'm so proud of. When you get in a position to help, you should try to help, and this has just been one of the great things I've ever done.
Well, we mentioned that you went to work fairly early in radio. You must feel comfortable now being in a radio studio.
I do. I started singing on radio and television before we even owned a television. In fact, some of the first money I made when I was little, I spent the money to buy a television for our home so Mom and Dad and them could see me on TV. But I was singing on local radio and TV with a man that owned a chain of supermarkets. He had a radio show that sponsored his groceries and TV. So I was 10 when I started singing there off and on, and I worked there until I graduated from high school in 1964 and then moved to Nashville. But radio has always been a big part of my life.
Do you have any of the old transcriptions?
Yes, we
So
have.
When you listen to yourself as a kid, do you hear Dolly Parton?
Well, it makes me laugh. I even have some pictures and some of the old shows that, you know, that we did, and it's just funny and cute, and, you know, it was like when I used to, first time I was ever in front of an audience, I got had to come back and sing the same song because I wasn't prepared, you know, for other songs. My Uncle Bill Owens, and they kept bringing me back to sing the song, and I thought, oh, man, I'm going to be a star now. I thought I was a star. I was 10, I think. And so I said to my Uncle Bill, you know, I'm going to be a star, ain't I? I think they really like me. And he said, yeah, I think you are. But it was only years later when I realized I wasn't that good. It was just they was applauding because I was little. You know, they just was really encouraging me. But that did encourage me, and it gave me enough encouragement to think that that's how I was going to spend the rest of my life.
And that led you to move to Nashville to pursue the career? Did you go because you were going to be on the Grand Ole Opry?
Well, I wanted to always be on the Grand Ole Opry. I always intended to be. And like I say, all my people were musical, but I wanted to make a living out of it. And so I moved to Nashville. I sent songs back and forth all the years that I was there. And to different publishing companies, and it was only when I moved to Nashville in 64 that things started happening for me.
So you were already writing songs?
Yes, I've been writing songs since I was 7 years old playing guitar.
And who influenced you in the early days?
Well, my Uncle Bill Owens, one of my mother's brothers, he's he played guitar, and we used to write together, and he saw my talent early on and thought I could do something good. So he'd take me around, and through the years we've written songs together. So he was the only one that my mom and daddy would let me go away with somebody, because at least it was family. He used to take me back and forth to Nashville in the very early days. We'd have some old trap car, get enough money to just out get some gas. We'd sleep in the car, clean up in service stations and, you know, in gas stations, and go on and, you know, try to get some stuff going in Nashville.
Do you remember the first song you wrote?
Well, it was a song about a soldier. I used to write songs about, the first song I ever wrote, I was only five. It was about the soldier story, but it was really, you know, it was my first sad one. But the first song my mother kept, she said, I was about five, I had a little cob doll made out of a cob, and she'd put tassels back on it and made the shucks back for a little dress, and I named it Tiny Tassel Top. So I had like, little tiny tassel top, you're the only friend I got, hope you never go away, I want you to stay. And then of course I rhymed some other stuff, but she always thought it was cute, and she kept it, and she gave it to me, you know, after I was grown.
And then when you were seven, you started thinking, I can write songs.
Yes.
As a professional musician.
Well, I started playing guitar, because, like I say, my mother's people all played musical instruments, and they all sang. And so anybody come around on any instrument, I'd make them show me. Guitar's always been my main instrument. But I could play, and then when I learned to play those chords, I'd just hear them talking, the family talking about things and people in the war. So, I started writing the saddest songs, heartbreaking songs at 7 and 8. 10 years old.
Were people getting concerned about this little kid?
Oh no!
Writing these depressing songs.
No, well, that was the way it is. You know how those country songs are the saddest, and all those old songs from the old world, those old Appalachian songs from Ireland, England, Scotland, all those Carter family type songs. That's what we heard anyway. So that's what I thought, you had to write those, you know, songs that make you cry. And so I've written a lot of them. I always say I've written a lot of sad songs, and some of them are absolutely plumb pitiful. And so some of those early songs were like that.
In case you don't recognize that voice, where have you been living? It's Dolly Parton, who is starring in a new film called Joyful Noise, which opens today in theaters around town. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Was it hard for you as a woman to break in as a songwriter?
Well, I think it served me well, because I was one of those people. I had six brothers. There's 12 of us, as we mentioned, six girls and six boys. So I was used to men, my dad, my uncles. And so I understood the nature of men. So I was never, you know, and I was confident in who I was. And I was, you know, I was always wearing my makeup and everything. So men always flirted with me. So it always, like, served me well. But I was smart enough to, you know, I could go in and I would just, you know, I would just go in and say what I've got. Here's what I got. I think I can make us both a bunch of money. And I was never a pushover. I was never one of those girls that, you know, took the flirting and all that. I always was complimented when they would, you know, and I used it to my advantage. So sometimes I'd get some things done that somebody else wouldn't, because they had an attitude about it.
Well, what leads you to write a certain song? Jolene, for example, or The Coat of Many Colors, or I Will Always Love You?
Well, most of my songs are songs that I've lived. Coat of Many Colors is a true story from my childhood about a little ragged coat that my mother made for me, because she didn't have enough material out of to make a coat of one color. So she used to do a lot of quilting. People used to send her scraps to quilt, and, you know, she made all the quilts for our beds. So she just made me this little coat and told me the story of Joseph and the Coat of Many Colors, and the kids laughed at me, and it was a hurtful memory. But after I wrote it, it eased my pain, and it helped a lot of other people. But songs like Jolene, there's a Jolene everywhere. We all have somebody to, you know, that your husband or your boyfriend flirts with, or you feel threatened by. There's never a woman so pretty that there's not somebody prettier than you, or you feel threatened by them. So, and I Will Always Love You is a song I wrote when I was leaving the Porter Wagoner show. It's a man that owned or had his own syndicated television show.
Porter Wagoner's a famous
singer. Yes, and
he had the first syndicated
television show, and I was the girl singer when I started with him. And so we had a love-hate relationship. I wanted to be my own star, and I said I'd stay for 5 years, and then we got very popular with our duets, and we fought all the time, and I wanted to go on after my 5 years was up, and he was wanting me to stay because it was going to, and I understood that, but we fought a lot. So, and I appreciated him, though, and I just... He wouldn't listen to me, so I just went and wrote that song, and that's how that one came to be. It's one of the biggest things I've ever had.
Well, because other people also heard something in it, and Whitney Houston probably made you a fair amount of change
on
the song.
She certainly did, and that's the song that gets recorded. You know, every 10 years somebody picks it up and makes a hit out of it, but it came straight from my heart.
Well, the question that people often ask, and maybe it's kind of silly, is do you have a sense when you're writing a song that this is going to be a hit? Because I've been in recording studios where the track just went perfectly. Everybody said, that's a hit. And, of course, that thing didn't do anything. But some other thing maybe that was recorded that day that nobody took too seriously is the one that took off.
I don't think anybody knows what's going to be a hit, whether it's this movie, Joyful Noise. It's a hit with us because we had a good time doing it. But who knows? The audience will say. But when I write songs, like I Will Always Love You, I knew it was a special song, and I knew it was a good song. But I didn't know if it was because it was just so personal to me. And nobody can know what's a hit. You just don't know, or we'd all be rich.
But you do know afterward there are certain songs that people ask you to sing more than others.
Yes.
Do you have favorites that are different from the ones that they ask you to sing?
Yes. A lot of my favorite songs that I've ever written are songs that are just in albums. Songs like, for instance, there's a song called Down from Dover. It was in one of my very early albums. It's a song about a girl that gets pregnant out of wedlock. And at that time, that was so long ago that they wouldn't even play it on the radio. I wanted to put it out as a single. That was just a no-no. But good Lord, now you can talk about anything. But it was about that. But it's some of my favorites are songs that a lot of people have never heard or that's just lost in albums. But I know I still love to sing songs like I Will Always Love You. 9 to 5 is a great fun song. I love to do that. Jolene, that you played earlier, that's one of everybody's favorites. So I still enjoy it.
In the film, you have to do a lot of lip syncing. I don't know when movies went from people actually singing on the set to the lip syncing, but I remember Debbie Reynolds talking about how difficult it was for her when she was in Singing in the Rain to lip sync perfectly and to dance at the same time. You're doing a lot of moving around here. Is it difficult?
It is difficult. I'm actually pretty good at the lip syncing because I usually sing a song. Well, it depends on what it is, but if I hear it back a time or two, I can feel it.
Because you don't sing it the same way twice.
No,
ever.
I don't if I'm recording, but once I hear what I've done, I'm better at it than a lot of people. But what was the biggest trick for me on this movie was the choreography. Michelle Lynch, who did a great job putting all the choreography together, but I cannot dance, and certainly try to dance and try to move, and like you said, to lip sync, and you know, when you sing to the tracks. But it was like, whew, I thought, Lord, help me. I was glad that it was about religion because I was saying, everybody pray for me.
Well, you could just have done a Tebow and nobody would have known the difference. You're still touring?
Yes. In fact, I'm taking off this year, but we've actually done 3 world tours in the last few years. We just got back from Australia in November, came straight to through the holidays, and then went straight to promote this. So we were in all over Europe, and we did United States, and then we did Australia.
Well, it's interesting how the rest of the world has embraced jazz and country music. For some artists, the careers are bigger abroad than they are in this country.
And mine is.
Why do you think that is? Why do we see so little country music on mainstream TV these days?
I don't know. Well, there's a lot of, well, country music is the hottest music right now. I mean, I'm very proud of everything that's going on there, you know, with all of our new wonderful people out of Nashville. But the tour that we had, it's amazing. I'm always so shocked because I've been at this, as you know, about like you, for like 45 years or so, and I built a fan base from my early music and then from movies that I've done around the world. And I'm always just shocked because we sold out the biggest part of the shows that we did everywhere we went. And it's amazing to know that all across the world like that, like in Australia, that far away, that you have such a great fans. And so it's great that they love the music.
But your husband doesn't go along. I've heard that your husband, Carl Thomas Dean, 45 years married, has only been to one of your performances.
Well,
is that true?
Yes. Actually, he came. Well, he's actually, since I said that, he has seen a few, because he wouldn't go for years because he was afraid he was going to get nervous. He was afraid if I messed up, he wouldn't know how to help me. He didn't know. And when he saw me the first time, then he relaxed a little bit. So he has seen me in odds and ends. He's going to go see this Joyful Noise movie on his own at a theater in Nashville. He'll never go with me to do stuff like that.
Before you go, I have to read this from Dennis from Harlem, who wrote, "Back in the late 70s, I was just starting as a 23-year-old Pan Am flight attendant, and we had Dolly in first class from Honolulu to Auckland. Even though I was working the back, the more senior flight attendants let me serve her breakfast because they know how much I love her. She was so sweet, made me blush, and asked me if she could keep me. After all these years, Dolly, I'm still waiting."
Oh, how sweet. Well, that's always nice to have people have a nice memory of you.
So, there is a sad side to country music. So many of the great ones have been passing away. Waylon Jennings, Johnny Cash.
Porter Wagoner. I lost Porter several years back.
Uh-huh.
Johnny and June. But I'm not going anytime soon, if that's what you're getting at.
Not at all. You look hale and hearty. And Dennis is still waiting for you to take him.
Well, Dennis, hello. I'm about ready. 45 years long enough to be married to the same man.
Time to move on.
Yeah.
Okay, I hope he's listening. Dolly Parton co-stars with Queen Latifah, also in the cast, Kiki Palmer, Jeremy Jordan, who is recently on Broadway, Dexter Darden, Courtney B. Vance, Jesse Martin, and some of the big, Kris Kristofferson, some of the big gospel people like Kirk Franklin. Joyful Noise is in theaters around town, and it has been my great pleasure to have Dolly Parton as a guest on my show today.
I'm honored to be with you. You're a legend, too. Thanks.
From here to the moon.